Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Figuring Out 30 is brought to you by Esme Skin Minerals, highlighting your natural beauty with Australian-made, clean, active skincare.
All right. Do you have set questions that you're asking? Or
this is going to be way more conversational.
I hope we go into how we know each other.
Oh, this starts with high school, bitch.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Figuring Out 30. This is a podcast exploring the chaos, confusion, and clarity that comes with life in our 30s. I'm Bridget Husthwaite, and on this episode, I'm taking you home to Ballarat. We are going to be hanging out with a friend from high school who also casually has over 1.6 million followers on TikTok, just casually. Her name's Celia Gurkovich. She's an entrepreneur and a content creator, and I'll tell you more on what to expect from our conversation shortly. It was so much fun to record with Celia, but first, a quick little rundown of the week that was, and honestly, just one thing has really been occupying my mind, and it was in the week before, like in the previous episode, I mentioned my mini mentee bee. So let's just quickly flesh it out, hey? So I've talked about Oscar on the podcast. Like, if you follow me on Instagram and TikTok too, you'd see him there. This sounds like we've broken up. We haven't broken up. I love that man, but my heart kind of hurts for him at the moment, and he won't even know I'm talking about this because he doesn't listen to the podcast. And I don't know if he'd want me talking about it, but it's just kind of doing my head in, and it's so eye-opening for me. I just wish people knew more about what stuff can be like for footy players. Because if you didn't know, he's a former AFL player. He started at Melbourne. His brother Tom still plays for Melbourne. And then Oscar was picked up by Carlton, except they delisted him at the end of last year. And he's had some shitty back issues. This time a year ago, actually, this week a year ago, Oscar had a major back surgery, like huge fusion procedure, like screws in his back. The recovery is 9 to 12 months. So really big stuff. And he's 27. So it's a pretty big thing to go through. And I guess Carlton didn't want to risk him like not recovering. And they had a lot of injuries last year. So Oscar's essentially dealt with this recovery himself, like learning to run again, easing back into footy. We'll give a massive shout out to Williamstown. He plays VFL at Williamstown now, like Plappy and everyone. Love Willie. They're not aligned with an AFL club. They're what you call a standalone club. And Oscar really enjoys playing there, which is, you know, we love that. He's back to playing full games, which is amazing considering how bad his back was. And there wasn't a guarantee that he could get back to playing full games, but he's played every single game this year. He's doing really well. And I don't know, he probably wouldn't admit it, but like injuries can bring a huge emotional impact. Like he essentially lost his job because of it last year. So AFL is rough, and they've just had the mid-season draft last Wednesday. So that means AFL clubs can pick up new players if they've got a spot on their list. And Oscar was part of that draft, and there was like some interest from the Sydney Swans. I just can't explain, like trying to make this a long story short, but the mental whiplash of football and that particular experience, the best way I can describe it is you apply for a job, you do the meetings, you do the interviews, you submit all the documents, except it's highly publicized and everyone knows you've gone for it. Everyone's talking about it and speculating. It's on the news, it's on the footy programs, it's in the papers, people predicting that you'll get it, people coming up to you and saying that and having their own expectations. People you don't even know, right? And especially if you're kind of like a reserved person and you're trying to keep it low key like Oscar was, and not me making it high key now, sorry, Del. But yeah, and then the way in which you find out if you've got it is through the live stream, like everyone else watching that. And your life can suddenly flip if you get it. Like if it's an interstate club, you pretty much move straight away. So we, you know, Oscar was managing his expectations really well. Me, a bit of an emotive person. I was just like, oh God, like if we move to Sydney or we'll do long distance, like naturally you think about these things because it can just change like that. I've done the long distance in Sydney before, so obviously I was thinking about it a lot. Yeah, I guess it kind of prompted a few trigger points for me from my last relationship. So I was a bit anxious and a little bit insecure, but trying to support Oscar. Anyway, Sydney didn't end up picking Oscar. And the thing is, like, they don't even let you know directly. They don't follow up with you and they don't say, we're not going with you, this is why, or we're not going with you, thanks for your time. Like, you don't even get that. You're essentially ghosted. I just think that is a huge problem. Like, each club would only be speaking to a small handful of players for the mid-season draft. Like, how hard is it to have a 30-second conversation on the phone or shoot off an email just being like, we haven't gone with you, thanks for your time. So witnessing this experience has been pretty brutal, and obviously he's disappointed, but he's just focusing on VFL and enjoying that. And Williamstown are doing really well. They won on the weekends, and maybe he'll have some luck at the end of the year for that draft. But me, new to all this stuff, people just don't understand the emotions that you go through. It's quite intense, and even I was kind of taken aback by it. But anyway, that has been consuming my mind for the past month. But it's over for now. And we are going to get into this episode now with Celia Gurkovic, who actually knows Oscar because he boarded in Ballarat, small town. But yeah, Celia is my friend from high school. I just rolled my podcast gear around to her house. She lives like 5 minutes away from mum and dad. And pretty much what you're going to hear is how Celia has emerged as one of Australia's most relatable content creators. Like, it's so amazing seeing Celia's journey, how transparent she's been with it too on her social platforms, and her fascination with influencing. We talk about our time in high school together, featuring one particular subject that traumatized us. And she takes us through her multiple business ventures, how she, you know, advocated for herself as a young female leader at a tech corp giant, why she'll never work for the man again, and also how Celia's idea of success has changed over the years. I was, yeah, really keen to get Celia on and kind of do a more career-focused episode to just show you that it's never too late to switch lanes and break away from work that doesn't value or fulfill you. So Celia's got some awesome insights, and I really hope you like our conversation because we had plenty of giggles and shared a lot of similar feelings too. So let's get into it. It's Figuring Out 30 with Celia Gurkovic.
Celia, welcome to Figuring Out 30.
Thank you for having me. I'm actually so excited. And I think it's because, as I was just saying to you, like, how we met and how we became kind of friends in high school, considering you're a year older than me.
Well, yeah. Well, we're the same age, but I was pushed into school a year earlier.
Yeah.
Let's get into how we know each other because, yeah, I think it'd be interesting. I wonder if there's like there's maybe a tiny Venn diagram out there because you have like 1.5 million followers on TikTok. You've got a solid platform on Instagram as well and YouTube. And then maybe there's like one person out there who like follows me and follows you and
maybe
isn't from Ballarat and is like, how do they know each other?
Yeah, true. Very true. I haven't thought of it like that.
Yeah. So we went to high school together.
Yeah.
We most notably had biology.
Which is the biggest joke because
let's go straight into the trauma.
Let's unpack that. I don't know what came over me and decided to do 3-4 biology in year 11 without doing 1-2 in year 10. I also, the only reason that I did biology is because, you know, when they start making you think about like your future pathways and everything.
I know what you're going to say, but keep going.
I hope you know where this is going. And I was like, I don't know what I want to do. And then I was like, maybe marine biology. Like, yeah. So I'm going to
That's right. You were like marine biology.
Bridge, all I wanted to do was swim with dolphins. I could do like a $150 like course down in Queenscliff and swim with dolphins. I didn't need to do marine biology. And my results were evident in that. Like, I did not need to be doing these subjects that I absolutely hated to the point where when we did biology together, when I was in year 11 and you're year 12, I redid it in year 12 and my results got worse.
Like, did you?
And then I dropped it completely. I should have gone with the whole like do what you think you'd enjoy in school. I really
should
have done that.
But they don't teach that.
No.
And I think as well, I actually don't know if biology ended up being a subject that they mark up, but I kind of angled for some subjects that would mark up, but they were just hell to do.
Oh God.
But I didn't realize you, or maybe I just suppressed it because biology really like was fucking
my
traumatic.
God. I literally felt like I was learning a different language. I remember sitting sometimes, it was you, me and Crossy sitting in classes.
And Luke Farquhar,
yeah. And I just remember looking at the board being like, this is gibberish. Like, I felt so bad. I remember Mrs. Baird, like, she was so lovely and so passionate about biology. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing
here? I know. I remember, I'm pretty sure my study score was 27. And if that was with marking up too, I literally just scraped in there.
My enter was like the biggest joke. Like, I was actually telling this story the other night. I, in my head, because I didn't need an enter. By year 12, I'd found the TAFE course that I wanted to do that I found out I got in mid-year. And I, in my, I don't know why, but I was just adamant I'd get a 63. I didn't need it for anything, but I just thought, I've got a 63 ATAR. It was enter back then.
Yeah, it was enter back then, yeah.
And I remember when all the results were coming out and people were getting the text messages and, like, mum was a teacher and mum was really on my case about, find out your score. And I was like, I don't want to know. Like, but I'd fully, like, gaslighted myself into telling me that you've got a 63, it's fine, like, you don't need it for anything. But, like, 63 is, like, you're above average. And I remember going to the computer one night when, like, everyone was busy. Like, I have three younger sisters. Like, they were busy. Mum was busy. I was like, I don't want anyone coming in being like, what'd you get?
Yeah.
And I remember clicking on this screen and, like, 47 kept showing up. And I was like, the fuck's this? Like, there's something wrong with the computer. Then I was like, oh, my God, I got a 47, which made total sense because I left my chemistry and my methods exam.
Your subjects are fucking disgusting.
Why did I do this to myself? Like, oh my God. When I look back, after, from that moment on, I was like, I'm never doing anything that I don't actually enjoy. And then that's the TAFE course. So that was so much fun.
I had a recurring dream for a while that I had to go back to do year 12 in my current occupation.
Oh, no.
It was actually when I was still at Triple J. So the dream was, like, I would have to come back to Ballarat and do year 12. And then I would be like, I've got to go do my radio show.
Oh, no.
And the rule was, like, if you get a higher ATAR than what you got in year 12, you keep the higher one. If you got a lower one, you just keep the one from 2008. I'm like, I'll keep that one.
Yeah,
it's so irrelevant to my life right now.
That's so weird you say that. I have reoccurring dreams too of methods. Like, I'm like, why? I actually genuinely used to love school and, like, the academic side of school until, like, year 10.
Yeah.
And that's when underage drinking came in and I was like, the brain cells, they're out.
They're elsewhere.
But also not picking subjects that I actually enjoyed was probably the biggest takeaway.
If you could go back, what subjects would you pick? Because and it's funny, we both work in creative media industries, and your subjects are a really poor reflection.
Such, like, so
what would
not
you,
me.
What would you do?
But also, I don't think back in school I saw myself as being creative. Like,
it was never encouraged.
No, God, no. And, like, I hated art. Like, I hated all of that. I remember doing, like, a textiles class. I was good at cooking. Like, I loved the cooking classes. And I played a lot of sport. So I probably would have done, like, outdoor ed and, like, foundation maths. Like, I just should have kept it simple and, like, actually enjoyed it instead of stressing the fuck out at school.
Yeah.
Like, I remember coming in one day and we were getting our results for, like, a math, like, methods SAC or something. Yeah. And we were getting it that day. And I think it was my first class. And I was like, I'm just going to bite the bullet. I went into the teacher's office and I was like, can you just tell me what I got? He told me I did awful. And I was like, I'm out of here. So I left for the day. I was like, I'm going. And I was like, no. But I loved school for, like, the social side and, like, the friendships made. And
Where did you work during high school? Did you have a little casual job?
My first ever job was at a supermarket.
Okay.
At Maxi Foods, which was, interesting. And then I got a job at a jeweler's, I think. Oh, no. Then I was at Fun Bugs, like the indoor place. And why I probably don't have kids.
Sorry, I take that back. I used to do – because I worked at Sturt Street Macca's and I used to do the parties. And I was the first party host to put a kid in timeout because he threw a shoe at me.
So, did you have to dress up though? Because we had to dress up. Like, and it was kind of fun though. I had two of my high school friends that also got jobs there. So on Saturdays we'd all be dressed up in these, like, ridiculous outfits. But it was just, like, a running joke. And then after that I got a job at a jeweler's. Again, just had no idea. Like, people would come in and be like, oh, I'm going to propose to my partner. And I'd be like, congrats, I guess. Like, I was just so awkward. I just had no idea. And then it got me in. The next job was IBM when I was studying. So it just sort of worked around everything. And then,
So growing up, what did you have envisioned for yourself by the time you would be turning 30? So marine biologist, no kids.
Like, I never, like, this is the thing. I've never been someone to envision like my wedding or like a career or anything. Like, and I remember that in school, like when it came to picking your subjects, I put down marine biology, but then I found out the TAFE course. I remember sitting in that office with that big, is it the VTAC book or something? Like,
yeah.
And closing my eyes and just flipping open to a page being like, I'm going to be a whatever.
Do you want, like, so I wanted to be a dietitian and it was based on watching Super Size Me on holidays in Burley Heads in year nine.
Oh, no.
And the nutritionist dietitian's name was Bridget in the film. So I was like, that'll do.
No, I literally remember flicking that book open and then I found this TAFE course that just sounded surreal. It was like, so this was at William Angus. It was a resort management water recreation and you got to pick a different like stream and I picked the water rec, which was like sailing and kayaking and snorkeling and an industry tour to the Whitsundays. And I was like, I'm sold, like I'm done. And it was the best. I think that's also where my business mind started to click because it was only a 2-year course. And in the second year, we had to like build, like pretend to start a business and like go through all the process of registering a business, getting insurance, like all these different steps. And I referred back to that when I started my first business, my eyelash extension business. So I think that kind of something clicked in my brain.
So side note, did you do business management at high school?
No.
No, right. No. I see. That's a subject I wish I did.
I wish I had done that too.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So that's so interesting how it clicked in. So I guess heading into 30, you're about to turn the big 3-0. What was going on in your life and how did you feel about entering that new decade?
It's honestly so weird because I feel like COVID really took that away.
Yeah.
Like, I used to have, like, I remember I had a big 2-6 birthday party and then I had a big 2-7. And then I think 28, 29 and 30 were all taken by COVID. And all of a sudden I was 30 and I was like, what the fuck? Like, how am I 30? But I never had any expectations of like, I want to have kids by a certain day. I don't even think I want kids. Like Buds and I have this conversation often. Like, we don't actually think we want kids. And I love the kids in my life, but I'm like, I don't think it's
You're funny. An auntie.
Yeah, I love and that's I love a great being an auntie
too. Like,
oh my God.
You can take have them fun. When you want them. See ya.
100%. But no, I don't feel 30. I think that, am I 31? I think I'm 31.
I'm 32. So would you be 30?
I think I'm turning 32 this year. So I'm 30.
I think I'm like,
this is the thing. I feel like, I ask my friends this all the time. I'm like, how old do you feel? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm like 20, 26.
Yeah, same.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
I do not feel like I should be allowed to be 30.
Well, it's probably that age because that's when things stopped, right?
Yeah.
That makes so much sense.
And just a lot happened. Like, during those few years of like lockdowns and everything, like my life completely changed. And I don't know if we're going to get into that, but like 2019, like New Year's Eve in December 2019, I finished my full-time job at IBM. Like, we all got made redundant. We had 7 months notice. I was traveling back and forth to India. I was doing balloons on the weekend. I was doing lash clients after work. And then 2020 was my big year of like working for myself, which I was like so stoked and so ready for. And then COVID happened and I was like, what?
Yeah.
Now what?
What do you mean?
Yeah. These businesses that I thought were like, and we had our busiest months ever on record for the balloon business booked in. And like Buds and I went to Bali in Feb 2020. And I remember Mum talking about like, oh, maybe you should wear a mask. And I was like, masks are for losers. Like, I'm not wearing a mask. Like, this is before all of that.
Yeah.
And we got back and I think within like a couple of days, that's when the lockdowns were like announced and every single booking we had gone, cancelled.
Oh my gosh.
Mm. It kind of worked out okay. Like, I don't know.
Were you freaking out though?
Yes and no. No, because weirdly, this is why I think everything happens for a reason. I don't know what came over me, but 6 months prior to this, I was like, you know what? Nothing bad had happened. But in the balloon business, I was like, let's make people pay a 50% non-refundable deposit, which they can reuse at any point. So we'd brought that in at like the perfect time because when we cancel, and it's very like vocalized to our customers at the time. I don't have the business anymore as well. So
did you have any customers be like, I want it back?
Only one.
Okay.
But that was one's valid. Good. She was from Geelong.
Yeah.
So we had an install in Geelong. So that was perfectly fine. Everyone else was fine. And a lot of them were for engagement parties, which ended up them reusing the deposit they paid for a baby shower.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Everyone skipped the engagement party, skipped the wedding.
Straight to the babies.
Yeah, exactly.
So what drew you to the balloon business? Was that something you were already thinking of whilst you were at IBM?
I started at IBM.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
So while I was working full time in the corporate world, mm-hmm. I have always been excited about business. Like starting my own businesses is something that I've just loved. The first business I started was when I was 21 and I started the lash business.
Yeah.
And then I had I don't know if you remember the My Monthly Period parcels.
Yes.
Yeah, because I think I sent you one,
yep.
didn't I?
Yeah.
And then I had like a drop shipping website. I was like really – when I was at IBM, I would spend majority of my time with like a YouTube video playing in the background and my headphones and listening to how people were making money online and like learning all these different things, which I think – is how I've been able to get to where I am now in a very short amount of time.
Mm. What was the account at IBM? So I worked in – I had a stint there, but then that part went to Concentric. So I was on the Holden customer care.
Oh, right, yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, my God.
Fuck me.
A lot of people had really interesting experiences at IBM. I was very lucky in my last role. So we worked on – I don't know if I should say, but like we were with a Telstra client, like telecommunications, and we – it wasn't like customer service. We were like a service center. So we worked for the Telstra employees, like the field staff.
Nice. You didn't have to deal with customers.
No.
So I had to deal with people's Holdens breaking.
Yeah, no, we dealt with, and it was great. Like I loved the Telstra. They were like blokes out in the field that are working in their utes and like you could have a laugh with them.
Yeah.
I got to work with a lot of different departments and stuff too. My leadership was where I really didn't like and where we had
you
lots
went
of...
To, didn't you go to India for
multiple
IBM?
Times. Yeah. Yeah, back and forth.
Yeah.
I think over three trips, it was like 14 weeks or something
wow.
in total. It was insane. It was – and I'm so
what an
grateful
opportunity.
For it. Yeah,
mm.
yeah. But it also opened my eyes into like just corporate life and how it's just – it's all money and it's all – yeah, I just did it. I just didn't align with it. But I knew that. Like I knew from when I started my business at 21 doing lashes. I have a very warped perception of money because of that though. Like I think at 21 being able to earn $80 for like an hour and a half of work, I was like, I'm never working for the man ever again. And then I got a corporate job because I was like, the lash boom happened here. So yeah, I feel like I've derailed your question. But
what was it? I can't remember.
No.
I can't remember what I was asking. But when you mentioned leadership,
yeah.
So you were in a leadership capacity at IBM.
Yeah.
What didn't you?
This is actually such a good story.
Yeah.
If we've got time.
Go on.
So I was a team leader and I had a manager above me and we got along great. And we were based in Ballarat, but all of our senior leadership were all across the country in different places. And something that I just hated was that like, decisions were made above you without including you, yet your team's the one directly affected. Like I used to hate that and it used to drive me insane. Anyway, my manager ended up leaving. I'd wanted a pay rise for a while, but like it just wasn't happening. And I was like, well, I'm going to wait for her to leave, going to wait for her however many weeks she had to give. And then I've got leverage because senior leadership aren't here. We've got a team of 32 staff. Like I think I must have been 27 at the time. And I was like leading a team of 32 of all different ages, all different like employment statuses, like full-time casuals, all that. And I also like my manager that I had was so great. Like she'd told me what she was on and what she was offered to stay. And then when she left and they offered me her position, it wasn't even an offer. It was like, congrats, Celia, like you'll be the manager. And I was like, hold up. what am I getting? Like, what's my pay rise? And they're like, oh, like we'll figure that out later. And I was like, hell no. I was like, this is my turning point. Long story short, I resigned. I resigned, gave my 4 weeks notice. I ended up getting a 33% pay increase 2 days before I was due to leave.
Really?
Yeah. And that wasn't from my management. That was other managers had come down to Ballarat for me to do handover to. And I remember it so clearly. Like we were brought into a room. It was me, these two managers who I got along with great, a team leader within my team who reported into me. And I was running them through all this reporting. They're like, why are you leaving? Like you're so good. Your team loves you. Like, it's like, why would you leave? And I was like, I'm not leaving because I hate my job. I was like, I love my job. I love the client, love my team. But I was like, no one knows what I do. No one values all this information I have. I'm young, like I get that. Like I'm dealing with these men in their like mid-50s who are on the verge of retirement that have no idea what I do.
So do you think that was the perception because you were young that you didn't take
100%.
You half as seriously as 100%. What you should
have been? 100%. And like I was always seen as like the second in charge because I was a team leader, but like my manager was older than me too. Like I know that's what it was. And like I had went to them and said, like, this is what I want to be earning. And they're like, it's not going to happen. And I was like, I'm not asking for anything. Like, I've gone into SEEK. I've seen what people are getting in other areas. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. But, got a great pay rise and then just continued to resign every time I wanted something. And it all worked out.
So like, how long did that go on for?
So I think I was in the manager position for, like, maybe 3 years mm-hmm. before the – yeah, 3 years, probably the full – oh, maybe 2 years. But then that's when they would announce the we're offshoring part of the workload.
Oh.
And I was like, again, a point of leverage.
Yeah.
Because no manager had ever had the time – because people just got moved around so much. No manager had ever had the time to come back to Ballarat. We're a tiny little regional town.
Yeah.
They're all in these big cities. They'd never come in to learn about us. So I was like, well, if I leave, then what? Like the people below me didn't have the experience I'd had from being a team leader from the get-go. Mm. So, yeah, every time I saw – and this is so bad and this is not how the corporate world should work, but, like, it's how the corporate world works. Like you're only – I feel, well, that's how it was for me, valued until you resign.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, my job wasn't corporate, but I can totally speak to that and you know, partially as to why I left.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't go back into the corporate world?
No.
Ever?
No. I would if I was working for myself.
Yeah.
Like I would if I was – there's things that I want to work on that I'm like, I could build out a big team for this. But, it wouldn't be the corporate dynamic of things at all, I don't think.
I had a tarot card reading and Ooh. It was at the start of last year and, the chick was like talking about work and she was – oh, what did she say? It was a very – like the line just really stuck out. She's like, they don't want to lose you but they're doing nothing to keep 100%. You. And I was like, fucking oath.
Yeah,
hey.
Yeah, literally. And so that's what would
so
happen.
So many
like,
people would – yeah, that's their experience.
Yeah, any time that I saw a point of leverage, for example, when my like senior leadership had come to Ballarat and like when I ended up taking on the managerial role and got that ridiculous pay increase, I was like, well, things are changing. Like I'll stay, but I'm like, I want this, this and this. And it wasn't for me. It was like full-time positions within my team to like create more stability and like make sure that we could continue on. And then when they'd come to me around discussions of, oh, we're going to offshore this work and do that. And I was like, well, I know that you need my help. So what's in it for me? And then, yeah, lump sum retentions were just thrown around. I was like, this money can just be pulled from literally thin air.
Yeah. Like, it's funny ridiculous. That it can, it takes for you to say that you're going to leave. And it's like, was there the whole time? That was my experience, like with my contract last year. And they were like, we'll give you what you asked for. And I was like, shouldn't have got to this point. And I'm at the point where I'm not like, I've mentally and emotionally, I've quit.
Yeah.
Like I'm not going to flip on my decision.
That was literally, so I had given my 4 weeks notice. My team had organized a present for me and everything. It was 2 days till I was about to leave. We're having like a big morning tea and everything.
So wait, what happened with that shit?
So senior leadership came down and they were like, I think my whole team was like thinking this was like my big goodbye. And they were like, Celia is staying. And I remember the looks on people's faces being like, what the fuck is she doing?
Did you
like,
get the present?
No, I think they hadn't bought the present. They also got money in, so they gave money back or whatever. But I
what
remember
about the cake?
I think we might have still had like a morning tea. Yeah. I don't think it was like it must Celia have been the day before. Right. Which is then awkward in itself because everyone would have known being like, what have they done to make her stay?
Yeah.
Money.
Like, but they wouldn't have felt weird about it, right?
I don't think so. I think because a lot of the team, like granted, I had a really great team. Mm-hmm. Like I would say 95% of my team were phenomenal and like if I ever had a corporate job again, I would hire majority of them again if they ever wanted work.
Yeah.
So I think they were stoked because it gave a bit more stability too.
And I think with you, you've always been very transparent and even, you know, stepping out of the work for a moment. So you had the IBM stint, you've had 5 businesses now, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe more.
Most recently stepping into like the social media world, I remember very vividly when you were jumping on your Instagram stories and stuff, you've always been really transparent. I love following your stuff.
Yeah.
but very transparent about like, I want to earn money on YouTube. I want YouTube to be an income stream. Mm. I want this amount of followers, talking people through it. But you were always very transparent about that. Like in terms of your influencing, nothing comes off as not genuine, because from the get-go, like where did you get that from? Like how did that happen?
Because a genuine interest to me. I'm like, I am so – I've always been so interested in like the – influencer content creator world. And like,
so what, who were you following, who made you intrigued?
I feel like I used to watch like Shani Grimmon, Michael Finch, like all of them, but I also just used to aimlessly scroll on Instagram and see like sponsored posts or like people were promoting things, and I just found it so interesting.
So you were looking at it as not so much like that looks so luxurious, and were you just like, how, like more so the logistics behind it, the business side?
I think there was the business aspect to it, like the income side of it. But I think for me, when I started my business, I was like, I don't want to work a 9-to-5 for the rest of my life. Like I think our generation too is very lucky that like the internet can create jobs and you can create work for yourself where you don't have to exchange your time for money. Like that was the biggest thing that was of interest to me. And because I had my previous businesses, so one of the businesses that I had, the My Monthly Period Parcel business, I reached out to a lot of influencers and got their rates and was – I remember opening emails being like, what the fuck? Like I have to – like this is what they're earning from doing these like videos. I was like, this sounds like so much fun, and like this lifestyle, that's what really appealed to me. I was like, I want to be able to do more of the things that I enjoy instead of having to wait till the weekend to do them or after work.
Mm.
Like I just – I think that was the big thing for me, is I didn't want to have to continue to exchange my time for my money. I wanted money to work around the clock sort of thing, or like be able to earn more doing less.
And have a work-life balance. Yeah. Did you not have that? Did you feel like you didn't have that in the corporate?
God, no. And I think that's probably my own fault though, because I had so many side hustles. So like what my weeks used to look like at its peak is I would do my, I think it was 8:30 to 4:30 at IBM. I would have a lash client at 5. I would finish lashes probably 8:30 or 9, depending on how many clients I would do. And then I started the balloon business. So then my weekends were Saturday, Sunday doing balloons. And fucking it was hell. Like, it was insane. And I did this for so many years. And
were
then
you happy?
We're going to get back into this conversation with Celia Gerkovich in just one moment. But first, a quick shout out to today's sponsor. It's been a big year of change for me, but one thing that remains a consistent and non-negotiable part of my routine is my skincare. And Esme Skin Minerals can help you unlock your skin's potential with their huge range of vegan and cruelty-free products that are made right here in Australia. From hormonal and sensitivity concerns to fine lines or aging, Esme has something to support everyone's skin journey. And you can even chat to one of their qualified skin consultants online for free to find your perfect match. For me, it's all about a fresh, hydrating glow, and the Esme team have helped me achieve this, particularly with the Uncomplicated Cleanser, which feels so beautiful on the skin and it doesn't strip the natural oils while cleansing. Plus, I'm loving the Detox Hydra Fluid, which is an amazing lightweight moisturizing option that leaves my skin feeling super smooth and soft. Whether you're looking to incorporate one new product into an existing routine or start fresh, you are bound to find something within the huge Esme range. So go check them out in the show notes of this episode. Plus, use my code BRIDGET20 for 20% off site-wide until June 20. Please note some exclusions apply and this cannot be used in conjunction with other offers. Thank you so much to Esme Skin Minerals for making this episode of Figuring Out 30 possible.
I think I was, because like I think I've learned that like money brings me happiness, not in the sense that I'm buying like stupid things, but I just get this sense of like excitement of like seeing an idea come to life that I've had that I haven't had any help with, and I can just start a business and be like, let's see how this goes. Yeah. And not all of them have been successful. Like Lashes was really successful. Lashes taught me, and every business has taught me different things. Like Lashes taught me about social media and how you can use that to like build a following and like get clients in the door. The My Monthly business taught me about like influencing and like profit margins, because that didn't work out. but like I would never ever see it as a failure because I learned so much from it.
Yeah, it's a lesson.
And then like the drop shipping, that e-commerce stuff taught me about Shopify and how to build a website and like how to like pack orders and all that.
Why am I like, as soon as you started talking about this, Thank You Next by Ariana, I've got in my head one that's time how it in was. One taught me patience. It's like you and your little business, like thank you.
But yeah. And then, yeah, then the balloon business was just, I just felt like I needed a creative outlet and I just saw a big gap in the Ballarat market. Like I saw these people that had followings on social media posting their kids' birthday parties about like big balloon installs. And I was like, wait, no one's doing that in Ballarat. Mm. Why is no one doing that in Ballarat? So then we just tapped into this like crazy unsaturated. And when I say we, I mean me. Like I was a one-man show doing this. And it just, what I thought would be a couple of hours on a Saturday morning turned into 8 to 10 hours on Saturdays and sometimes Sundays and sometimes Fridays. Like yeah. It just, yeah. So.
And having your own like office space and then a little team and your van.
Well,
and
I didn't have that at the start. Like no. I started the business from home and very quickly, like it got to the point where the amount of confetti and balloons in my house every physically weekend, I was impossible. Like, I'm over this. Like, I'm so over this. And we were very lucky. We found an office space, which was amazing.
So. Yeah. So how has your idea of success changed over the years? Like how would you have defined it perhaps at IBM as opposed to how you define it now? What's the evolution of that definition for you?
Oh, that's a good question. I think at IBM it was like climbing the ladder. Mm-hmm. Like I think that's probably – but I never saw it like that to me. It probably came back to the money side of things. Like, and it wasn't like being money hungry. It was like I just want to get to a point where I feel like I'm earning the right amount for what I'm doing.
Yeah, so that it's was valuing probably, your worth.
Yeah, yeah, there was that. And then in my businesses, the success side of things was just seeing a flourishing business where like even when we sold the balloon business, I was like – I was really at a crossroads with it. I had planned on my original plan, and I hope I don't go off track doing this.
No, it's good. Yeah, so why did you sell it?
So when I finished at my job in 2019 and 2020 was my big year of working in my businesses, my plan was to build up the balloon business, which was already on track already. Like we had crazy months of bookings and then would look to sell it mid-2020. Obviously, the pandemic had other ideas. So then 2020, 2021 was just sort of keeping our head afloat. I think by February 2022, we were sort of back to what we were pre-COVID in the sense that people were booking things in months in advance. We could sort of forecast, I guess, whereas during the pandemic, we would be at a lockdown for 2 weeks and you might get a quick few bookings and then you'd have a heap of bookings that had to get cancelled.
Yeah.
So I knew when I decided – so, yeah, 2022, was when it started to really pick back up. And by this stage, I had a following on social media. I was doing stuff that I really enjoyed. I was able to like just work on things that I actually wanted to do. Mm. And I could work less and have there's a lot to unpack with that too anyway. But I was like, I can't keep doing what I'm doing. I'm going to burn out again. Yeah. Because I always felt like I was on the brink of burnout when I worked full-time and had all my side hustles and like – was always on the brink of burnout, but I would cater for that by going on a quick holiday and then come back and be like, oh, straight back into it.
Yeah.
Whereas when the pandemic happened, went on a quick holiday, came back and then was like, wait, now I can't work because whatever. So when we decided to sell the business, I had also considered just closing it and being like, you know what, close this chapter, it's done, whatever. And then I was like, it's actually such a good business. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have to do barely any marketing. Like we've got we had such a great brand name and the girls that have it now still do. And you didn't have to do much and you'd had messages coming in for people wanting to pay hundreds of dollars for installs. So I was like, that to me was success for that business. And that was felt very early on though, like even pre-pandemic, like when we first launched, I couldn't believe that all of a sudden I could be earning almost what I would earn for 2 weeks of work at my full-time job in a weekend.
Yep.
So like it was crazy and very proud. Like when I was deciding to sell the business, I was like, can we actually do this? And then when we found like the perfect people to sell it to who had
wonderful
just like
handover.
Yeah. Like, and I think to be honest, this is where I think everything happens for a reason. Like the handover that I did in India for IBM, I feel like really came in handy for like, all right, what do we need to make this as smooth as possible for this hand transition?
Mm. Yeah, it's just lesson. Yeah,
literally.
So now, what is today's definition of success for Celia?
That is still, I feel like I'm still figuring that out because like I know for myself, and I don't think it's a great trait, but I know I'm very driven by money. Like I just am. Like I find it really exciting, and like it still blows my mind when there's brands in my inbox being like, we want to work with you. And I'm like, what? Why? Like, it's, like I love it. Like it's so cool. But I think the success thing for me, and I'm still learning it, is that I can work less and I can still earn a decent amount of income.
Yeah.
Like my goal all along when I started my social media thing, like I wanted to do YouTube. Like YouTube was my plan. I was like, I want to get monetized. Even if it's a couple of $100 a month, that would be great. I actually haven't hit that on YouTube. But that's because like when I started on YouTube, my goal was to get monetized, and I'd heard so many people talking about TikTok and how it's this undersaturated platform and like Gary Vee and all that sort of stuff. And I was like, I'll try TikTok. Like I was sitting at home. I'd moved into the boys' house. It was a mess. So I was like spending my days doing time-lapse cleaning videos. And I remember like the first TikTok account I created was just like a cleaning one. Like it was like.
So that was your first upload?
Yeah. But it was like not under my name. Like I started a whole profile, like a separate profile thing. And I remember going to sleep one night and then waking up and the video had like hundreds of thousands of views. And I was like, what? Like maybe it had got to 100,000 views. And I was like, wait, this is unsaturated. Like my account's growing. And then I was like, fuck this. I'm making a personal brand. And I'm going to tie it into my YouTube. So my plan was to start a TikTok, funnel the traffic of people that were interested in me and what I was doing into my YouTube videos so that I could hit the monetization requirements on YouTube and start earning money. Very quickly, my TikTok just like blew up. Like, but it wasn't, I wouldn't say very quickly, but it just, I just love the process of it. It wasn't like I was seeing the future of it as like a money thing in a sense. It was more that I was like, I'm loving doing this. Mm. And I can, there were some days during lockdowns where I would post 15 videos on TikTok and not even realize I'd done it. Like it was just something that filled in the time for me and like distracted me from like the chaos that was going on around everything. Yeah. So I guess when it comes back to the success side of things for the TikTok stuff and like social media, I am really still trying to learn that I don't need to be in hustle mode all the time.
Yeah.
That is killing me. Like this has been something that I've been working on for like probably the last 2 years where I can't.
Are you guilty of toxic productivity?
Yes, I am. I find myself sitting at my laptop doing absolutely nothing, being like, you don't need to be here.
Yeah.
You don't, go outside and make a video. Like you don't even have to do that. Just like go and do all these. The amount of times I've written down a list of like things I enjoy doing outside of work, like baking something, mowing the lawns, like silly things like this that I'm like, you like doing this, go and do more of it instead of sitting down trying to work.
Do you feel bad just sitting still and not doing anything?
Yeah.
You feel bad just watching TV or
something? Yeah. Yeah. The, like I have recently been like, you're having a TV day.
Yeah.
Like just sit down and watch TV for the day.
I guess if you can trick your brain into like penciling it in like it's a task or an appointment almost, it might make it easier for you because you're so wired like that.
Literally, the weirdest thing is every time that I give myself the space to just like chill out, like I don't go to the day spa often, but both times that I've gone to the Ballarat day spa, I'll go there and I'm like having a just, I'm just having a sealy day where I don't have to do anything, no work, don't look at your laptop, don't look at your emails or anything. I will finish that session and an email will come through for a big brand deal. And I'm like, it's like the universe is rewarding me. I swear to God, every time, every time this happens and I notice it, I'm like, I need to just chill out more. Yeah. But it's very hard. And I think because I've been go, go, go for so long, like from working full time, having an after hours job, like doing the lashes and then balloons on weekend, like 7 days a week, nonstop.
I think also the culture that we see on TikTok as well of being your own boss, being your own CEO, and like there are real extremes. Like if you go down that rabbit hole, there are real extremes of people, you know, doing the wake up at 4 a.m. and doing everything and really glamorizing that. Mm. So like that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, I've tapped out of the whole hustle culture stuff. Yeah. I'm like, I'm done with that. And I do see business ideas. I get business ideas all the time popping into my head. And there's things that I can weigh it up very quickly being like, would that actually be worth my time or no? But it's so hard. It's genuinely so hard to switch off. And I think any business owner goes through this. And COVID was probably like a big eye-opener for a lot of them, especially in the beauty industry. Like you have to exchange your time for things. And it's just like so mentally draining. Like so mentally draining. Mm. So that's something I'm still learning is to how to just be okay with the unknown, because the influencing side of things, as we spoke about before we jumped on the podcast, like I think a lot of people look at it and you see people on like comment threads talking about like, oh, they get sent all this free shit and they're getting paid thousands of dollars for like making a video. If it's that easy, you do it.
Yeah.
It's not that easy.
It's like, not. And for me to be able to step into it post ABC where you couldn't do any brand endorsements, it's been so eye-opening. It's very time-consuming. It's very strategic. And there's honestly an art to making it look effortless.
Oh, my God.
People don't think about that. It's not easy. But people can make it look easy, and that's why you're going to buy the fucking product and watch the video.
Yeah.
Like, because it's easy for you. Like,
and that's the thing, people say, you see the videos. So like followers see your videos you're uploading and they think, oh, that looks fun. Like she's going and she's doing this or whatever. You don't see the back and forth absolute shit show of emails,
the logistics, negotiating, admin
chasing invoices. Like, but even like the admin of like getting a brand deal, like some of them are easy. You know what? Some of them are very like, hey, Celia, we want you to do this. Would you be interested? I think it's really cool. I do want to do it. Here's my rates. Accepted, done. Like, that does happen.
And it's also when you do accept a brand, it is also ensuring that they align with your morals and values and align with your brand.
Yes.
Which people wouldn't think about when they're watching, but that's what a successful partnership is. If, you know, you've done your Rocky Road like videos, you've just put up paid partnership with Cadbury or whatever.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And I wish.
goals that you're even on their PR list.
Yeah, like, no, it is so exciting. So exciting. This is the thing. I love getting mail that's not bills. So like whenever I get something in my PO box, I'm like, yes, this is great. But again, I've seen people, and this is where I think being older and being in this industry is the biggest blessing. And also probably like my previous business background is that I've seen influencers that are up and coming and blow up that they talk about getting a PO box and they get sent heaps of this stuff. Then they get slammed online because like all these businesses sent them these things and they haven't made videos for it. When I first started, I had a PO box, and I would do a few unboxings here and there and mention that I have it, but I was like, don't send me stuff unless you think I'm actually going to like it, because I'm not going to make videos for things that I don't like. Like the amount of times you get sent scrunchies and candles and like all these things, and I'm like, I don't burn a lot of candles at home. Like, I'm not gonna just make these videos for that. So it is very figuring out like what you're comfortable with posting, and then but also thinking of the repercussions of everything that you're posting.
Well, that's the thing. Like, and it's also again valuing your work. If you're not actually obliged to post everything that you're gifted.
No.
Like, that's why there's a difference between gifted, sponsored content / paid partnership. Yeah. Like, if you're gifted something, you don't put a money value on, like, I'll do a grid post or a reel.
Yeah.
Like, people charge good money for reels.
Like, yeah, and like TikTok, like it's, but see, I think I learned this too when I had my monthly period parcel business. I was sending out, so I would message an influencers that I couldn't pay their rates. Like, I was like 26, but my business was bringing in barely any money, but I was like, I love the concept of this and I want to get it out there. So I would message influencers, and I tell this to friends that have like small businesses. Like, if you want to get in front of people, what you should do is like reach out to the person who you think directly aligns with your business, like an influencer, content creator, whatever, and just say, hey, we love your stuff. We'd love to send you something. No need to post. We just want to send it to you. Like, the reverse psychology of that, when someone does that to me, and I hope like this doesn't get out and I end up with all these parcels, but when a brand does that to me, I'm like, that is actually so nice. Like, you're not putting any pressure on me. There's no like follow-up being like, the parcel's been delivered. Have you got it? I think it was a podcast or something about the do you remember in school, the triangle swimwear?
Oh yeah.
And what they did.
Wait, what did they do?
So this was really interesting. So they wanted to get it onto a Kardashian or like a Jenner, and they wanted to get Kendall Jenner to be wearing this like triangle bikini. So instead of sending it to her, they sent it to all of her friends as like we're sending this to you. You might like it. You might not. Just we're sending. No need to post anything. They sent it to all of her friendship group. And then Kendall Jenner reached out to them being like, my friends are all wearing these bathers. Like, I want them.
I didn't know that.
I know. I was like, well, that is played. It's so well played. Like, I watched that, I think it was a podcast, or maybe it was like a clip on TikTok or something from a podcast, but I was like, that's so interesting. But yeah, that's just, if you've got a small business and you want to get in front of an influencer, don't. The other thing that I hate is like, I get emails all the time, predominantly at skincare businesses. I don't know why. And they're like, we would love to send you this like skincare miracle cream and then exchange it for a video. I'm like, okay, one. And I know this is very privileged to say, and like it sounds so stupid, but like this $59 product that you're trying to give me in exchange for what I usually charge for a TikTok is the math ain't mathin'. No. Like, this is not how this works. Like, I understand and I appreciate your hustle, but like, if you had gone around this differently, it might have worked out different for you.
I know I may have crumbled at math and methods.
Methods wasn't my strongest.
But math ain't mathin' here.
Oh my God, that happens all the time. And I'm like, I really appreciate the hustle because like I was in this like for so many years trying to get products to like big influencers. And this happened to me. So with the My Monthly business, I sent it to Shani Grimmond. Do you follow her?
No, but I know she's big.
Huge. Yeah, she's huge. And I remember so many, I must have been doing lashes or something, and someone messaged me. Oh, I had multiple messages on my Instagram being like, Shani Grimmond's posted your period parcels. Like, how did you do that? And I was like, literally what I said before. I sent her a message being like, hey, would love to send this to you. Oh, actually, I don't think I even messaged her. I think she had her PO box number in her Instagram bio. So I just sent it to her and like wrote a nice letter being like, no need to post, like followed you for years, which I had. And I was like,
very genuine.
I think she'd been posting about like period pain or something.
Yeah.
So I was like, here.
Here's this and that's the thing, parcel. Like keep an eye on what they're posting and if it looks like it's likely that they could post your product.
Yeah.
Like don't just send it to someone because they've got a bunch of followers.
Oh God. Like, do you get that too? Like brands that just completely do not align with anything you post?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. But I do. I honestly get a lot of – I actually get a lot of like – female pleasure stores, like lots of vibes.
Yep, yep. Had them in the inbox too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is fine. But again, it's also like going back to the expectation of taking on every partnership or posting every gifting. Your followers also get really sick of you if they just constantly see you posting gifted, gifted, gifted.
100%.
You have to really, again, be strategic about the content that you're putting out, even if it's just on your stories, like that it's a really authentic, like everyday life, so people can connect with that, with your business and stuff. Yep. And not everything has to be like glamorous, gifted.
Yeah.
Like people can't relate to that.
No,
right?
But that's where I think like TikTok was really key.
Yes.
For the like non-aesthetically pleasing. Yes. Like people just showing up with their like bed hair and they're in their pajamas and they're making a video and you're like, that's me.
Yeah.
Like it's, yeah, I think that's what I prefer. I prefer TikTok over Instagram, but I find myself on Instagram probably more, which is kind of weird.
So how would you describe your brand? Like what is Cecilia Gurkovich brand to you?
I guess it's like a lifestyle kinda.
Yeah.
Like I have been strategic in this. So when I first started my YouTube, I wanted to share my business stories because I had these conversations all the time about how I started different businesses and I wanted to share like what I knew because I thought this is valuable for people. And those videos are still out now.
Yeah.
When I started my TikTok, one of my first videos that really blew up was me making a gender reveal balloon in my balloon business. I think it had like 24 million views, whatever.
Whatever.
But I didn't want to be the balloon girl. Like I didn't want to be just balloons.
Okay, here's my question because a lot of people will say with TikTok that it's like really hone in and be niche. Mm-hmm. Like if you love styling, your videos are just all get ready with me. But you've managed, and this is what like I guess I'm figuring out with my own TikTok, I guess, is like wanting to be able to post all sorts of different things. Like I don't want to just be a music presenter. Like I want to post when I'm unboxing an exciting handbag or I'm in my dressing gown or I'm going to an event or whatever. Mm-hmm. So how do you make the broad brand appeal on TikTok when you're always told to be niche, right?
It probably doesn't appeal. That's the thing. I think I went into it knowing that if I do the same, if I just post balloon content, and this is I had in the back of my mind, I'm going to sell this business at some point. So I was like, and I could have been really strategic and just gone all in on balloons. I've got balloon courses. So I launched them through COVID, which did really well. Mm-hmm. And if I probably had gone all in on balloons and launched those courses, they probably would have done phenomenally because I would have had an audience that's really interested in balloons. However, the long term of it, I would have got so bored just doing balloon stuff. I was like, I like TikTok because I could post things away from the business and it felt like I was separating that.
Yeah.
And I think I knew I didn't want to be a niche. Like I didn't want to go, and for anyone listening that doesn't understand what a niche is, like doing just balloons would have been my niche, like being very specific with what you're posting. I wanted my niche to be me and everything that I was doing. And that isn't always the best option. And from an analytics and engagement point of view, it's definitely challenging. Like there are times where my videos don't perform well. Like, I've got 1.5 million followers. That doesn't mean I'm getting over a million views on every video at all. Like, there can be days where my videos are lucky to get to 10,000 views, but then the next one might. And I have been very, like, very aware not to focus on the numbers. Right. I've said that from the start.
So, and managing those expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, like, it gives me the freedom to make this probably more sustainable the longish term than if I was to just niche down and be posting just baking videos or just balloon stuff. Like, I know if I was doing that, I would then dread doing that.
Mm. And so when you do brand partnerships and stuff, are they asking for like an engagement rate? Like, what's, because you know, like, that's definitely a thing for Instagram. And I lately have kind of been a bit caught up in like, oh, I'm not getting as many likes as what I used to on a post or whatever.
Yep. So like, whenever, if I'm reaching out, like, I've made my own media kit, which needs to be updated, which is just like an overview of analytics, demographics, all that sort of thing. When I'm reaching out to a brand that I really want to work with, I will send them my analytics for the last 30 days.
Yeah.
Because I think at least that's a month's worth of content.
And it's up to date.
Yeah, it's up to date. It's real life. Like, it's, if they want to see individual video analytics, happy to show them. But like, they can go to my profile. And like, that's the beauty of it from a brand perspective. If you can go to my TikToks and see, oh, she hasn't had that much. She's got 1.5 million followers, but she's not getting that many views. And that happens. Like, yeah. But I love what I do. Like, I genuinely love just creating silly little videos on the internet. And it is a bit of a head fuck though, because sometimes I think, oh, wait, like, what is the long term of this?
Yeah.
Can I do this?
Do you overthink it?
I wouldn't say I overthink it. No, that is a lie. I definitely overthink it. I think I get to a point where I'm like, well, what's your alternative? Leave and go back into the corporate world or go and find a job somewhere? No, this is great at the moment. Like, this is so, so fun. I can earn great money. But the key thing is I have the freedom with my time. Like, I have, yeah, I think that's the thing. You never get time back.
Mm.
But then I do overthink it in the sense of like, okay, what's life going to look like in 10 years time? Mm. Then what? I get a corporate job if I want to. If I get to the point where I'm hating TikTok, I'm hating creating content, I'm not enjoying it anymore, I'll move on to the next thing. And I will easily cut those ties because I've done it before with my businesses. Like, if something's not working, see ya.
See
ya.
Thank you next.
Yeah, yeah. Bye.
Thank you next,
bitch. Yeah.
When you first put yourself out there on socials, I remember you doing it, and definitely on the external it looked very fearless and confident, which is amazing. I remember when you did it, and I thought back to when I did the Channel V presenter search. So like 2012, still living in Ballarat. I was really scared to put myself out there like that, an audition, and it was like a public audition, and then you have to like publicly campaign for yourself for people to vote and stuff. And thinking back to 2012, because it was literally the very start of Instagram, this wasn't a very common thing to see, I suppose.
Yeah.
And being in a small town and also being like, you know, freshly turned 21, there's definitely a lot of immaturity and having that fear of judgment and people talking about you. Have you felt that? Like, when you started out, did you fear, were you self-conscious about what people would make of you, you know, putting yourself out there like that? And how have you kind of navigated it?
I'm glad you've asked, because I think a lot of people would just think I'm very, very confident and that I just don't care. And there is an aspect of that. However, I think for me, COVID was, and I say this in like understanding that COVID was a horrible time for a lot of people, COVID for me was a blessing, because for the first time in ages, I was able to just stop and be still and be like, what do I want to do? And I think also when I first started on YouTube, and like, I think when I started on YouTube, I'd made 7 videos before I announced it anywhere. I was like, I just want to test the waters, put it out. My other friend, I don't remember, Casey?
Yeah.
So she was stuck here.
Kilmore.
Yes. Yeah. She was stuck here during COVID, and we both started YouTube at the same time. So it was just kind of like this fun thing that we just did together. And she had a lot of success with it too. But when I started, I did my YouTube, created 7 videos, then mentioned it on my Instagram. Then when I started TikTok, I was like, no one in Ballarat's going to see my stuff. Like, a lot of people, and I did too, like, I thought TikTok was for kids that could dance. Like, that's literally what I thought it was. And then when it started to grow, I was like, oh, okay, like, I'll post. But my analytics, like, majority of my following is American on my TikTok.
Right.
But on TikTok, you can check your individual video analytics, and a lot of it's seen by Australians.
Okay.
So I was like, no one knows what I'm doing. Like, until I started sharing, and I think on my TikTok, I mean, on my Instagram, I was sharing, as you said, about being transparent. I was sharing like the growth and stuff. I wasn't sharing the videos.
I loved the videos of you writing down like your YouTube followers with the highlighters. So soothing.
Literally. But I wasn't sharing like the videos I was making on TikTok. I wasn't posting on my Instagram. And I look back and I'm like, because to me, I was still like Instagram was like Ballarat people, yep. People that knew me here. And I was like, oh, that's a bit cringe. Like, don't. I felt awkward. Like, yeah. I felt like it's putting yourself out there. Whereas TikTok, I was like, no one's going to see this. Who cares?
That's your biggest platform. How do you feel about your 30s so far?
I like them.
You like them?
I think going into 30, people are like, your 30s are great. And I was like, I don't feel 30. That's the thing. But I think this time of my life, I've got life experience behind me, which might sound really weird to anyone who's older, like you're 30.
Yeah.
But I feel like I did a lot in my 20s. Like, I did a fair bit of travel. I had all these businesses. I learned from relationships and different things. And I think you go into 30 being a little bit more self-aware, but also like, yeah, I like it. I like 30s. Would recommend.
Thank you for jumping on my podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Solid chat.
Yeah. God, I can't wait to listen to this back and be like, oh, why did you say
If you want to stay connected with Celia, I'll pop her TikTok and Instagram links in the show notes of this episode. I really hope you enjoyed that conversation. It was so fun to record. And a big thanks once again to Esme Skin Minerals for sponsoring today's episode. If you want to check out their huge range and secure your free and live online skin consultation, just hit the show notes of this episode and use my code BRIDGET20 for 20% off site-wide until June 20. Please note some exclusions apply and this code cannot be used in conjunction with other offers. I'm Bridget Hustway. Thank you so much for listening to Figuring Out 30. If you like what you're hearing, don't forget to rate, review, like, subscribe, and share it with your friends. And this podcast has been created on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I'll catch you next week. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.